Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to this episode of Creator Support. Today, we're going to be talking about the anti-thumbnail theory.
Also today on the show, what's up with all these creators making so much money on Snap? Like, should you be starting a Snapchat show?
We also discuss the Hollywood writer's strike and if YouTube creators are responsible for killing unions.
Not fully responsible, but like partly responsible.
All right. If you make it to the deep end, let us know. Last week was a really big week for us.
I mean, Doja Cat. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, so, okay, for reference, if you don't know what we're talking about, Colin and I were part of Brandcast, which is YouTube's upfront. It's essentially where YouTube does a big presentation in front of all the big advertisers, 1,500 people in the Lincoln Center in New York, and presents kind of what's going to happen in the next chapter. One of the biggest things was the NFL, the NFL's partnership with YouTube and Sunday Ticket, which is super cool. Destroying was there with the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell.
Arak was on stage.
Arak was there. Michelle Carre.
Yep.
Jacob Collier, who's a great musician.
Beautiful voice.
And then Doja Cat closed the show, and Colin and I introduced Doja Cat, which was really fun. And we did a big segment on, you know, the future of advertising on YouTube.
YouTube keeps bringing us these interesting opportunities. Last year, we introduced Diddy.
Diddy. You're right.
Diddy.
Yes.
Diddy.
Yeah, you're right.
We introduced
There's always a great musical guest at these YouTube events.
And we've been fortunate to introduce them.
But the production was just such a big scale. And it was, I mentioned this last week, of just kind of the emotion of seeing our face on this big poster in New York. And I think even more so this week, being on stage and having like this massive production and having it say Colin and Samir and then being able to speak on behalf of YouTube. It's been this really cool thing of being able to like shape this platform that we've dedicated so much time too in our life, you know, that's been a really cool thing. So that was Wednesday night. And the next day we launched the Discord, which was like a whole nother emotional roller coaster. And just like an incredibly exciting day. When we pressed,
felt like I was hooked up to an IV of just like internet power and like social media content and engagement. It was just nonstop. I was so sucked into the Discord.
Yeah. Right when the Discord launched, it was just like, I mean, it's a very unique opportunity to see the physical manifestation of our community.
Yeah.
Like actually see people come into the space and the type of people who come in, right? And it's the first time you really face your audience.
And we've spent years sort of aggregating and collecting a group of like-minded people.
Yeah.
So to then all of a sudden just be in this digital space with them where you can all interact and there's all these different channels and every channel is a place that I kind of want to spend some time and hang out.
Yeah, totally.
You just can get lost in it and you and I both got lost in it.
Oh, of course. How could we not? Again, it's like all this work of building a community. People talk about community a lot. You know, a lot of people in the creator economy talk about community, but what does that actually look like? And we got to face it and be like, oh, this is what it looks like. This is our community.
It was really cool too, to see who was joining. Not only creators from all over the world, shout out to everyone from Australia, because there were
We got to read this. This is from the Discord. This is from Pete THT. He said, honestly, if there isn't a shout out to all the Aussies in the Discord on the next potty, I'll be spewing.
Whoa, that's a lot of Aussie lingo.
Yeah. But Pete, there's your shout out. So please don't be spewing.
So not only do we have creators from all over the world, but we also had people who work for creators, which has been really interesting.
Yeah. So right after Dude Perfect released this like crazy, you know, highest trick shot.
Yeah.
Which was an awesome video.
World record basketball shot.
Crazy video. But Matthew, who works for Dude Perfect, the head of social, like immediately when that video was posted, posted four thumbnail options for the video that they were considering and posted it into the thumbnail feedback part of Discord and asked for, you know, what everyone thought.
And then posted analytics in the analytics channel.
That's right. Yeah. Super cool. So we have people who are working for creators, creators themselves, and the introductions channel has been a really cool place because we asked people to make video introductions. So I actually wanted to play one of them.
Okay.
This was one of my favorite introductions over the weekend.
Hi, Discord.
I'm Joel, and I'm a relatively small YouTuber. I'm also an overthinker and a perfectionist, which is why I almost scrapped this video a million times. But it's also why I make fun videos where I try to inspire others to try new things by focusing on progress instead of perfection. I love talking storytelling, cinematography, thumbnails, mental health, and pretty much anything YouTube related. So I'm really looking forward to this new tribe we're building here. So right now, I gotta go back to recording that voiceover, but I'll see you guys on Discord.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I think the thing that stuck out to me and what has stuck out to me, you know, in the week that the Discord has been live has been the concept of having a safe space to share content.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, you know, YouTube, TikTok, some of these other places don't feel safe because either A, you put something out, has low viewership, and then you feel kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's got 50 views, that feels weird. Or you put something out and it goes really viral to a group that you didn't intend it to go to, and then you feel kind of like judged, or like people, you're opening yourself up to, you know, a group that's uncomfortable. And that, I think, stops a lot of creators from growing and incubating.
Yeah.
And so I think that one of the coolest things about the server has been that people can share creative work like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a group to receive it.
Yeah.
And that group is has a shared interest and is like, oh yeah, I'm down to receive a video like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, validation is so important for creators, especially early on. And validation doesn't have to come through views.
Yeah.
It can come through human interaction,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, even a few people commenting on a video is way more impactful than sometimes a million views, but having no understanding of like what people really think about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. So, this partnership with Discord has been really interesting because it's like an opportunity for us to actually find out who our community is. And what's so cool is they're creators, so they're making stuff for us to watch.
Yeah.
And then again, it's like the conversation we want to be a part of. So I did quickly just want to thank Discord and thank them specifically for sponsoring this episode. And I wanted to bring up two features that we used over the past week that I think are really unique community building features. The first is voice channels. So the server asked us to open up voice channels, and so we did it.
You talking about the cozy corner or editor's den?
We have editor's den. We have this cozy corner. We have the lounge, and we popped into one, and there was a group of creators with one of them editing, mm-hmm. sharing their screen, and everyone else commenting on like, hey, yeah, hold the music a little bit longer there, or like make that cut shorter. And that was so interesting to see, like a space to collaborate and mm-hmm. hang out and chat and meet with people. And at any given time of the day, you can check and there's like the voice channels are going and people are hanging out.
Yeah.
And talking about things. And then the second feature, which was so exhilarating, was the live stage. We hosted our first AMA mm-hmm. where we ended up going live into the Discord on stage, bringing other people up on stage to ask us questions. It was like hosting a live radio show.
Yeah. And the production setups of everyone we brought on stage.
Yeah, that was cool.
Were for the most part incredibly high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which was really cool mm-hmm. to see that because everyone is pretty much a creator.
Totally.
Like if they're going to be a part of a live AMA and come up on stage, it's going to look damn good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think what was really interesting about it was this like, there was like inside jokes that came out of that. There was, chat was a whole nother thing. It almost felt like we were becoming streamers in this environment, but getting to do it in this way that was like so collaborative with the community. And I see this future of that type of space and those stages being an opportunity for us to bring experts on to actually, you know, help guide some of the conversation, answer questions.
Yeah.
And also it's very liberating because there's no post-production attached to it. It's like, we're there, we're live, we're here to bring value. We're here to connect with our community, and then it's off and it's done.
Yeah.
And then what we saw was right after the AMA, people were talking about it in other channels.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I would say anyone who's listening or watching right now and who's a part of the Discord or wants to be, if you're interested in being a part of an AMA, like if you consider yourself an expert,
totally.
You have something to give,
And
you would want to be featured, let us know either in the comments or in the Discord.
Yeah. So is it launching the Discord was something I was nervous about. And
same.
I was really nervous about how it was going to go. And now, you know, a week into it, I'm so happy with it. And I think a lot of that has to do with our community, our mods, and then again, our partners at Discord. Thank you guys so much. If you guys want to join the Discord, the link is in the description. A lot happened in the world of YouTube as well. We should talk about some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Linus stepped down as CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like the Linus company.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting thing to bring up. So, you know, he's stepping down as the CEO of his company and moving into more of like a visionary role, right? I think he's calling himself
the creator.
Yeah. Chief right. visionary.
Not necessarily officer. The operator of the business.
I think that's an important thing to discuss of like, does a creator need to be the CEO of their business? Or what does that even mean to be like the CEO of your own business as you're growing?
I think ultimately if you bring in a CEO, they're not fully your boss because you are still the creator and you're still in charge of whether they're there or not, if you like them. But in this instance, it does help greatly if you find the right person who can act kind of like your boss, right? And you get to stay in your lane and be creative, and they get to look high level at the operations of the business and what's going on and be kind of like your quarterback, your central sort of hub for what you're doing.
I think if you, the creator, are the CEO of the business, you're not going to be the best creator. Mm-hmm. You're just not. There's too much other stuff to do as a CEO for you to be the best creator. And I think we see that a lot where creators who end up becoming the CEO of their own business, the content ends up struggling because if they're not the creator, not the creator.
I would say including ourselves. We including are definitely ourselves. Not immune to that at all.
No, not at all. I think through experience, I'm saying that.
Yeah. I
think one of the best versions of it I've saw was with Rhett and Link. Like Rhett and Link are not the CEOs of Mythical. You know, they have an executive team there. And I think that is definitely the direction it's all moving. But I liked that video a lot from Linus, and I liked the like openness of that discussion and just what that discussion brings forward for creators.
Yeah, I think it's important to see those types of roadmaps, you know, and for a creator to talk about it on their channel. That's what I love. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have to be a public facing video.
Yeah.
But making it public, I think, is super impactful and shows us that it's a really important decision.
I love how meta YouTube is.
Right? Like what other shows, let's call them shows.
Yeah.
Would make an episode of a show all about who's the new CEO of the show.
Or like, I'm who's no longer directing the show.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's super interesting.
That's even how I felt about iDubbbz video. Mm. So iDubbbz with his Content Cop series, which is incredibly critical, many times super hateful.
Yeah.
But also entertaining. He kind of had a moment where he no longer agrees with the version of himself that was on the internet.
Yeah.
And in a way, the audience that he had built, a part of the audience that he built, and just made a video addressing that and being like, hey, I am no longer that person. And I am sorry for that. And I apologize for that. And I think it's so important to show other people that you can change, that like there's precedent for this, that you don't have to be stuck in a certain type of format if you don't feel like it's fully you. You know, that's like... Yeah. Some creators, right, it's not going to go that far where they're actually making like bigoted, hateful content at times. There may be some creators who are just stuck in a certain type of format, like Lizzie Capri we've been talking about. Like she was in a type of format, kids content, that no longer felt true to herself and was able to make a change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, pretty significant change.
Huge change. Yeah.
Aged up the content. And
launched an OnlyFans.
Is launching an OnlyFans. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty big pivot, but I it does feel like we're in this era of YouTube where people are evolving and changing a lot.
Yeah.
Like it feels tangibly different right now, right?
Yeah. I think we're like you said, we're seeing people like age up and we have enough people who've been on the platform or who've been creators long enough that they can't help but change because it's super hard to not be yourself, right? And we're seeing some interesting decisions being made, like iDubbbz unlisting a bunch of his content. Mm-hmm. Anthpo graduating from college and being like, hey, I'm done with this experience.
Yeah.
I'm no longer uploading videos.
I think we're also seeing that, you know, even in the Discord community, what you're recognizing is like, there's people who are part of our community, but most of those people are creators themselves. And that might be somewhat unique to our community, but I would assume that in a lot of communities, a lot of the audience, they're also making. And that's new, where it's not just like, hey, we are the creators, you are the audience. It's like, we are all making stuff.
Yeah.
And we make different stuff from you. And you watch our stuff and maybe we watch your stuff.
Yeah.
And that is a whole new landscape where on YouTube now, there's a potential that everyone is a creator.
I think that's, you know, after a certain amount of time, like every creator, even if they're not talking about the business of creators, is aspirational to a subset of their audience who wants to do what they're doing or something like what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think over time that compounds.
Yeah.
Where you have a lot of different people in different industries, niches, everything, who've been looking at their favorite creator saying, well, I don't want to talk about what they're talking about, but I'm pretty interested. Let me try this, you know? Mm-hmm. And now we're sitting with a ton of people who are creators.
Yeah.
You lower the barrier to entry too with like TikTok and Reels and Shorts, and the on-ramp is easier.
Yeah.
To at least try.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super interesting.
Okay, this is our first question we're pulling from the Discord, which is from Burr.
What's up, Burr?
What's up, Burr? So something I've been thinking about a lot lately is longer form casual content that have thumbnails that are aesthetically displeasing, like how Moist Critical stretches his thumbnails horizontally. It looks bad, but it's still visually distinct, and I know it's his content. Is going against the grain of pristine thumbnails viable for someone just starting out? Or would that be driving viewers away by thinking the video itself is poorly produced?
I think all that matters is if it storytells. Because what we're talking about with Moist Critical, with like the stretched sort
of thumbnails, we should explain that.
Or even like Mogul Mail, Ludwig, yeah, right? Like he'll put that. A tweet and then like stretch the tweet to fit in the thumbnail. And it doesn't look like anything you've ever seen before, which is good, but it also looks like intentionally kind of shitty.
Up one of these because it's so compelling though.
But it tells a story. Every time he puts a tweet in one of his thumbnails, the copy is something that is sort of dramatic or makes you want to click. Like it adds intrigue. So I don't think it matters if you have like a pristine image or a blurry photo of a potato chip.
Yeah.
You know, as long as that tells a story.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's so interesting though. Like Moist Critical, he does reaction content. So he'll like, you know, pull a screen grab or something from, you know, something that's reactionary. He's also though a relationship-based creator. Like Moist Critical is creating content and you are clicking because you like Moist Critical. And yes, some of these concepts will drive more viewership than others, but largely the viewership, like there's a video I'm looking at right now. It's called This Took Me 17 Years. And it is a YouTube selected thumbnail of his face.
Yeah.
And it has 1.3 million views.
Yeah. His eyes are closed. His mouth is kind of open.
It's an intentionally kind of whatever. Because it's like,
but there's drama and tension in that. This took me 17 years. And you're looking at like a crappy photo of him. You're like, well, that doesn't pair up.
But that can't be a new creator.
True.
That only works at 1.3 million views because it's Moist Critical.
Yeah.
So that's the question that he's asking is, you know, can you do this as an up-and-coming creator? You know, we're also looking at another one, Disney's Latest Failure. It's kind of like a ridiculous screenshot where you can barely read the headline.
Yeah.
But Disney's Latest Failure, it's something that we were talking about in the thumbnail feedback section of the Discord about like unclosed loops of saying Disney's Latest Failure suggests there's a failure that Disney just went through. And I don't know that. Like me right now in this moment, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And then the thumbnail shows a headline. It's like, oh, there's a headline and I can kind of see it says Star Wars. So now I'm like, my interest is piqued enough that even after we're recording this, I'll probably just check this out because I can't not know what this is about.
That might work for a new creator.
But This Took Me 17 Years might not. I agree. I think the concept of aesthetically displeasing for the, like, just to be against the grain, it's not going to work if you're just thinking that this is like creatively what works. It is like storytelling. It is also being really topical. Like Moist Critical and Ludwig with Mogul Mail are incredibly topical. If there's like a tweet that goes viral, that's what they put out.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever that moment is, they are commenting on the moment. I think like with editing, with graphic design, with all of this, like I am more attracted right now to the more lo-fi styles.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I'm almost over, I've been edited at so much, you know, as a viewer.
Yeah, I think you can predict what's behind the thumbnail and that's probably, or at least you think you can, so you are less inclined to watch.
Right.
With something that is like lo-fi, it's perhaps more singular, is your thought, that like this is a unique video.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, just to answer the question too, it's like for a brand new creator, what I would really think about is how did the thumbnail and title play off each other? How do they complement each other? Just try and make sure they're not saying the same thing. And if you're new, like you are going to have to cast a wider net to reach audience. But I think when you get to a point where you have a dedicated community, you can kind of play around a bit with these loose thumbnail formats. And again, if you're a streamer or if you're like someone who has a lot of clips like Ludwig or Moist Critical, it's a bit of a different thing. So yeah, but I think we'll probably see more of this. We'll see more of like toned down thumbnails. Like I think we talked about Colt Kerwin's video before, but I think that was a version of a thumbnail that was like pretty chill.
And it's not like we haven't seen those before.
No,
right?
We've seen it before.
It's just a little bit cyclical.
Yeah. All right. Next question. From the Discord, from Yikes. A few weeks ago, I got an email from a publishing company offering me my own Snapchat show. I didn't think much of it until I watched Tejas's new video. Would it be worth it? I hear Snapchat pays a crazy amount, but I'm not sure if I'd be able to commit to doing it while also doing YouTube. And I don't want another platform to take priority. not to mention still being in high school and barely being able to manage the workload I have without adding another platform.
So in Tejas's video, which we can link in the description of this episode, he dives deep into why David Dobrik has abandoned YouTube for Snapchat.
Yeah.
And conducts some pretty interesting interviews in there and gets to the bottom of kind of how Snapchat works right now with stories.
Yeah.
And what he found was that, you know, people are posting 70 to 100 stories a day. Smaller creators can make like, you know, 1,000 to 3,000 a day, which is like really, really,
I mean, that's
really
crazy.
Significant.
That's crazy.
And so then you think about what someone like David Dobrik is making at a million views per day, posting 300 snaps a day. Like it's absurd.
I'm not a mathematician.
No, you've never been.
Never been. But $3,000 a day for 30 days.
Yeah.
Again, I said I'm not a mathematician.
Yeah, we'll leave that there. That's neither for
us. I was just saying the
us. That's not for us to do.
That's not for, neither of us are mathematicians. Someone can put that in the comments, how much that is.
Yeah.
But for a young creator, like that is, it's very hard to say no to.
And this is low lift. This is like you're posting photos of whatever, 70 to 100, and the ads that play in between these stories, you get a cut from Snapchat. But I think these amounts are probably inflated. Right now.
For sure.
Because I don't know if I believe...
The moment is right now.
I don't know if I believe that the style of content warrants high advertising dollars over the long term.
Yeah.
Right? So it seems like a play of, let's get creators talking about it, let's pay top creators a lot, and see if that trickles down and people start picking up stories.
Yeah.
And then ads come. It's like, can it be a self-fulfilling prophecy? Which maybe it can.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, Snap's the place to make money, inflate the amounts... People start coming to Snap, then advertisers come too.
Yeah.
It could happen.
It could happen.
But now it feels like a moment.
Yeah, it is a moment. And I think there's a couple different versions of Snap. Like, I think Yikes, what you're talking about, is a Snapchat show.
Mr. Yikes.
Mr. Yikes, yeah. Which is different from Stories, which is different from Spotlight. And I'm not super familiar with Snap, so I'm interested to hear in the comments people talk about Snap. But... I think that the zoom out, it says, would it be worth it? And then goes on to talk about, you know, I'm barely able to manage my workload being a high school student and a creator. And I think the question becomes like, what is the desired outcome for you as a creator? Is it that you make the most money? Is it that you make the most interesting content? Is it that you build the deepest connection with your audience? And all of those things can happen, but I think you have to prioritize one at a time. And if the question is, how do I make the most money? Then you're looking for efficient ways to make content and make money doing that. But in my experience, that will lead you down an empty road. Like you will, yes, sure, you will monetize, but you'll be waking up and being like, I have to post 100 photos, 100 videos on Snap today. And if that doesn't naturally come to you, if that feels like the only reason you're doing it is for the outcome that you're hearing that people are making $3,000 a day, maybe you can have some short-term excitement, but it's not going to lead to a place of like creative fulfillment, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been offered Snap a lot. And I think it's interesting.
If we had a system for it, like the Snap stories, I'm not sure we could.
Snap stories, I don't think we
could bring that into our
workflow. I don't think we
it's like not super natural to who we are to like post a ton of photos all day.
Yeah.
Maybe if we had someone on our team helping us and we thought the content was interesting, it could happen and we could turn some of our episodes into like a Snap show.
Yeah.
I think that's a possibility.
I'm specifically talking about stories. Like, I don't think we can do stories.
Yeah. I do think it's a good opportunity, you know, to find new audience and like be in a new place. I just don't know if we have the process or the people right now to prioritize that.
Yes.
Like, we got enough going on and we're focused on this.
Yeah, and I need to have a deep connection with the audience and who the audience of Snap is. And I'm not 100% sure exactly who the audience of Snap is. I think if I could solve that, I would understand how to provide value to that group. But I wanted to bring up two terms that we talked about at dinner last night. We went to dinner with the Spotter team.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Rob Gable at Spotter that I was going to steal this, but I'm citing you, Rob.
Okay.
So, Rob, here you go.
But from this point on...
It's mine.
It's ours. Yeah. This is the only time we will cite you for the rest of time.
But he's...
This is ours.
We were talking about this exact concept of like, how do you say no to things? How many things can you take on?
Yeah.
And we talked about two things. We talked about bandwidth, which is like, how much time do you have in a day?
You only have so much bandwidth.
You only have so much bandwidth. And I think that we also undervalue how much bandwidth it takes to come up with an idea that's compelling.
Let alone for a brand.
Yeah. That's a lot of mental bandwidth, right? So there's bandwidth, which is your time, your space, your energy towards creative ideas. And then he came up with the term brandwidth. Which I really liked, which meant how much of your brand can be out there? Like, how many partnerships can you announce? How many spaces can you be in? How many shows can you have? Brandwidth is kind of like, how much can your audience take? Yeah. We have so much content to consume that how much can we tell all of you about what we're doing? Mm-hmm. How much can we launch into the world? How many partnerships can we talk about before you're like, I don't know what's going on. I can only latch onto one thing a day. You
gotta find where your bandwidth meets your brandwidth. Something like that. You know what I mean?
I'm not a mathematician, Colin.
Nah, you've never been. But there's something there.
There's something there.
Brandwidth.
There's a good saying.
You stretch too thin, too many brands.
Yes. But I loved that. And I think that conversation, you know, with the spotter team was really great and refreshing to think about, like, this is a long game.
Yeah.
You know, you are in high school.
When you say you're, you mean yikes?
Yikes. Okay. Not you.
Yeah. Got it. Is our next question from,
Yeah, I guess the two usernames have been Burr and Yikes, which is kind of funny.
So welcome to the Discord.
Yikes is a great member of the community. Yikes is very involved.
I liked that. I know it was my joke.
But you liked it a lot.
But I liked it a lot. I've been trying to put that in this whole time.
That was good.
Thanks.
Quickly, just to bring it up, because I loved it, Michelle Carre's boxing video.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Stylistically very different from her other videos. This was a 45 minute documentary of her training and then boxing at Creator Clash, and like well-conducted interviews and characters, her coaches. It was super interesting, incredibly well shot.
So if you're not familiar with Michelle, she makes a show called Challenge Accepted, where she takes on, you know, a very big challenge, whether that's, you know, doing like marine training, running a marathon in the hottest place in the world, or in this scenario, taking on a boxing match and becoming a boxer. She's done it in ways that I really respect, that feel a lot more like TV or Netflix. But they also respect my attention as a viewer, which I really like. This one had opening credits, which was crazy. I haven't seen a YouTube video with opening credits with like a cool kind of black and white boxing, oldies music playing, opening credits. I was like, whoa. And I watched it on my TV.
Telling you, man, I think obviously, you know, we've heard time and time again that watch time's going up on connected TV for YouTube. It's like the leading, this is basically me at Brandcast, but like they're the leading, according to Nielsen, the leading streamer on TVs right now. Yeah, this is Brandcast calling.
And now Doja Cat.
And now, welcome Doja Cat.
Yeah.
But I do think there's going to be a category of creator that makes things specifically for TV, where the style of the content requires you or asks of you to watch it on your TV, to lean back a little bit. Like our Mr. Beast documentary from last year, we don't want you to watch that on your phone.
Yeah.
Like we're asking you with the format of that to like lean back, grab some popcorn and sink in.
And watch it,
Yeah.
I want to ask the audience right now, and if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Pods, you can tweet at us or pop it in the Discord. But are you watching YouTube on your phone, computer, or TV the majority of the time? I would say TV for me is the least amount of time. Like I don't watch much YouTube on my TV, but this weekend I watched Michelle's video and I watched DP's video, Dude Perfect's video, on my TV.
I almost exclusively watch YouTube on my TV.
You know what's crazy though? When I'm watching YouTube on the TV, if there's like kind of a slow moment, I pull out my phone and watch shorts. And then I was like, oh my God.
Maximum consumption.
YouTube got me.
That's too much.
YouTube got me.
Yeah.
Like they're on my TV and they're on my phone at the exact same time. How did they figure that out?
That's a lot.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What other app is
like
that?
You gotta check yourself, man.
Okay.
You gotta check yourself.
Stop judging me for a second.
I can't help but judge you in this moment.
Don't judge me about this, okay?
I guarantee
you're telling me you haven't done that
before. I guarantee you're not alone and there's a chance I've done it.
I guarantee I'm not alone on this podcast right now as a person who's had the TV on and is swiping through short form content.
Are you referring to Jesse right now, switching the angles?
I mean, he's swiping right now. Okay, he's in Discord.
All right, got it.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting though, that like YouTube was on both of my screens at the same time. But I agree with you. I think TV is going to be a big factor, but I wonder if like retention will take into consideration where someone watched it. Cause like when I'm watching something on my TV, my nature is I'm less likely to click off of it because it's hard. It's like the remote is kind of like annoying to do, but on my phone, it's really easy to click off. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you can be scrolling while you're watching in the corner.
Which is crazy. Yeah. Super interesting. But YouTube being watched on TV brings up this next question from the Discord from Ramses. And Ramses says, did YouTube kill unions? As I ponder the ongoing writer's strike, the complexity of their fight resonates with me. Platforms like YouTube have revolutionized traditional compensation systems, particularly residuals, creating a new landscape that we're all trying to navigate. As YouTubers and creators, we must critically evaluate our role. What part do we play in this reshaped domain? How does our presence and influence affect these critical issues? Are we unintentionally contributing to the decline of these unions? Is it time for us to band together and unionize for our voice to be effectively heard? A lot of questions in there, but a really interesting topic. We should explain a bit. I think we've talked about it, but like the writer's strike, the concept of unions, like what is happening in the traditional world, and how does that relate to what's happening on YouTube?
First off, I would say I think we should bring someone on the main channel probably to talk about this because I've just been learning from afar. Like I am not a part of the Hollywood system. I am not familiar with it, and I've been trying to learn. But right now, the Writers Guild of America are striking. Mm-hmm. And I think I said on a past episode that it's like 9,200, but I think it's actually close to like 11,000 writers in Hollywood right now. And they're demanding a few things. One of which is that studios don't use AI. Mm-hmm. Another one is that...
It's like the connection to royalties, right?
Connection to royalties, that's a big part of it. Basically, there's this huge change where... You know, in the past, if you've written 22 episodes of Seinfeld, those are still being showed on TV networks today. Those networks are advertising-based. Those writers are still getting revenue from the ads. So that's a great situation for writers that they're rewarded for their work.
Yeah, and good incentive to write.
And not too dissimilar, like in a way to YouTube is advertising-backed. Mm-hmm. We create videos, and if those videos still perform over time, ads still play on them, and we still make some money from them.
Yeah.
Right? It's somewhat similar.
And we make 55%.
We make 55%.
Of the revenue.
So.
Which is like, it is a residual, right?
If you look at what's happened with streaming, the rise of streaming, streaming is not about advertising. Streaming is about getting people to sign up for subscriptions. Mm-hmm. So they need a lot of shows and good shows. They need this cycle of content coming out so that you sign up for Netflix or you sign up for Hulu. They're not very public at all with their numbers.
Yeah. So that complicates residuals.
And it complicates, when you're not advertising backed, it complicates how much money from subscriptions goes to each show. Mm-hmm. So if you have a show that brings a lot of people to Netflix, it does really, really well, you're not getting paid that differently as a writer as a show that doesn't perform well because you don't really know how it performed.
Yeah.
You might have an idea, which is difficult because you could have a show that's a cultural phenomenon. The structure should be that you're incentivized to do well.
Yeah.
And get paid if the show brings subscribers more and more. But it's difficult.
It's more difficult on streaming
than it is advertising. So that's part of what they're looking for is like better residuals. And also what's happened is that people are ordering less episodes. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like cable of the past where it was like 22 episodes a season. Let's renew. It's like, well, let's just test out 8 episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And see how
it's
going.
And we need more moments. Like Netflix needs a lot of moments. They need like the Arnold doc to come out. Yeah. They need the McGregor doc to come out. They need Beef to come out. They need like Love
They're
is Blind.
They're throwing a million darts.
They just need things to be, they need these marketing moments. Mm-hmm. And what I find to be really interesting when it comes to this conversation, this is a big conversation. I think you're right. This is like a main channel experts.
I'm like trudging through mud to figure this out.
I think the reason it relates to what we're doing is because, as I mentioned, over the weekend, I watched 2 hours of YouTube between DP's video and Michelle Carre's video and Dodford's video too about Adam Sandler, which was amazing. Those three videos I watched on my TV. And that means I didn't watch Netflix. That means I didn't watch Hulu. Or TV. Mm-hmm. I watched YouTube. And that means that the creators, the independent creators, like Dodford, Michelle, and Dude Perfect, they monetized based on what I watched, not not Netflix, not anyone else. And that brings into question, like, what happens to the traditional system when, as viewers, our options are now even playing field? When Michelle Carré is making a documentary, it's the playing field is kind of even, you know? And I have more of a connection to Michelle, so I'd rather watch that than watch, you know, McGregor Forever, the fighting documentary on Netflix. So that's like that is a big confusing part of this that I think it would be really good to get an expert on, or if anyone in our audience knows more about this than us. I think this is a great discussion and something to also inform what is the future of YouTube companies look like when it comes to incentivizing and compensating the team, right? Like, what does it look like as you start to put this together? As these worlds are starting to get more and more similar, what can we learn from the way this is being conducted?
Yeah, I mean, we know multiple creators who've hired people from more traditional backgrounds.
From Hollywood backgrounds.
Backgrounds right now, which is interesting. And granted, a lot of these roles are for unscripted shows. Like, YouTube is such a home for unscripted. Narrative shows, I think, will be on streamers. I don't know if I see a future where shows like Severance and Ted Lasso roll out on YouTube. I just think the budgets are too high. It feels unrealistic.
But I think
me.
We'll see a rise of unscripted where, like, you know, in the last writer's strike, we saw a rise of reality TV.
Yeah.
And I think the rise of unscripted this time around means a rise of content on YouTube, you know, and potentially TikTok and all these other formats where advertising dollars are there. So, like, creative people now might come over here, right? Yeah. Who used to work in that system. I don't know. I think this is a much bigger discussion than, you know, just this short chat about it.
It's interesting. I think what Dodford is doing is worth talking about because he's making these short documentaries right now about traditional Hollywood actors and entertainers and directors. And they're phenomenal. Like, they're really, really, really good. To make what he's making and put it out on television or on a streamer would be really difficult.
Super difficult.
The clearances you'd have to get.
Oh, yeah.
For all of that footage that he's using.
Yeah.
Right? The people who would have
to be... It'd be nearly impossible. It would take years.
The sign-off from all of the companies that own all of that footage.
The name and likeness.
The name and likeness of Adam Sandler and Steven Spielberg. How the story is being told.
Yeah.
Almost impossible to
the
make that.
The amount of archival footage he's pulling is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The chance of making that on traditional media is...
Yeah.
Slim to none.
And if you're unfamiliar with Dodford, you should become familiar with him. Check out his channel. He's making these documentaries about...
Yeah.
Like, not only... He started talking about some YouTube topics, but now has grown into more traditional media. It's like story of Steven Spielberg, story of Donald Glover. It's really cool. But I agree, that is nearly impossible. But our culture on YouTube is a lot more like the tech culture of move fast and break things, where it's like... No, I'm not going to go get clearances for that.
It's like a digital scrapbook. I just pull what I want.
Just pull whatever I want, whatever footage I want. I'll just put it together and then boom. Yeah. And I have a sponsor on it and I have a million views and it's like grow an audience based on it.
I think the risk over time maybe is that culture changes.
Yeah, if that culture changes, that's going to change a lot.
That's going to change a lot.
Yeah. The convergence of these worlds is going to be really impactful.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's been like slowly happening for a decade and this writer's strike might make it happen faster.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. Good topic. Good topic. Maybe we'll pick that up in the Discord. That's a good topic. I think we're in the deep end, Colin. Which feels like there is a deep end channel in the Discord and people are spending a lot of time making graphics of us. Now there's some really good ones of us sitting at the set with snorkels on with bubbles coming out, but my favorite one was this like time lapse of someone making this like Photoshop GIF of us underwater wearing wetsuits and like a fish goes by and goes through our goggles. Like it was so impressive.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for making that. And here we are in the deep end.
I got a gripe if we're here.
Yeah, sure.
This is a mid-show gripe. Cockroach in the bottom left side of the office. Dead. Not happy about it.
Okay, we'll move out.
We
should move out, right?
That might be the end of the show. I don't know.
But that's also the nature of having like a studio. You know, being
every
like,
studio we've every ever studio had, any type we've of office ever had. Has had a cockroach.
Always. I think it's the nature of like production gear. Like the cockroaches see it and they're like, there it is, cameras.
Maybe Jesse can grab a shot of it, but it is just looking at me in the face right now.
Well, it's dead, like, right?
It's dead, but...
Scary.
But I'm not happy about it.
No, I hate cockroaches.
That's a gripe.
Terrible. Good gripe.
Thanks.
Also, great gripes in the Gripes channel.
Yeah.
Great gripes. Yeah. Nate from Published Press talked about a baker's dozen and saying, like, what's the deal that bakers just get to have this mathematically incorrect version of a dozen?
Yeah.
All right. Question from Luke Harris. Does Colin have more than one jumpsuit? The answer should be yes. And we all want to see the photo of the closet dedicated specifically for jumpsuits. That actually would be really funny.
I got two jumpsuits. I got a summer suit and a winter suit.
I hope we get a jumpsuit sponsor. Like, I think a patch that goes on there.
That's interesting.
That's rotating would be really cool.
I'm open to it.
But it would have to be like completely kind of random, like a local auto body shop, you know?
I'm open to a local sponsor
like
if anyone.
Pico Wheels.
Yeah.
You know, I think that'd just be so funny.
I'm open to a patch sponsor for anyone listening or watching.
That'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, I'm open to it.
Okay. Mr. Swift says, I'm about to graduate from high school next month. What are some things I should do to make the most of it? Like, if you could go back, what would you have done? Good question, Mr. Swift.
That is a good question. I think I would have taken a year off, actually.
Me too. I would have done a gap year.
I'm sure that's a common response, but as you get older, it feels like there are few opportunities to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And just see kind of what happens. To get a job that you know doesn't need to be your whole life, but that pays the bills, and to try and move around a little bit.
Yeah, and to do it without heaviness.
Yeah.
You know, to do it without so much weight of responsibility and all of that, if you have that opportunity. Going back, like I feel like I had that opportunity and I didn't take it, of traveling. And I think I needed a lot more perspective on life before I went to college. And it would have been helpful to have more perspective. And I think I was in a rush. What's ironic is like, I was in a rush to go to college and, you know, do something entrepreneurial or get a job that then could allow me to have the freedom to go travel. And that doesn't happen because you just get caught in the flow of it. Right. Yeah. And we have a very amazing reality now where we get to, you know, we were in New York last week. We're going to London in, you know, a month. Like we have a really cool reality where we do get to travel, but it's not as free and kind of unique and you can't be as spontaneous.
You and I haven't had much time without each other.
That's true.
Too. You know what I mean? So like coming out of high school and getting a truly solo experience to travel without, to be like, who am I?
I think the thing
is something that you and I agreed probably would have enjoyed.
I think the thing to note is like to be an interesting person, to be an interesting writer, to be an interesting creator, to just be an interesting human being, you have to do interesting things. And I think like allowing yourself to do unique and different things when you're young is like, if I could go back, I would do that. I would travel and maybe get a job overseas or like just see more interesting things. Not to bring up AI. May I bring up AI?
Was that your AI voice or was that you?
But the output is only as good as the input.
So you're saying like with humans as well, the output is only
with
as
humans,
good as the
like,
input.
I've been thinking about this a lot of like AI is based on our machines. AI algorithms are based on our own interpretation of our own makeup, where it's like, if you have really good input, you'll have really good output.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you go to a really good school and you learn a lot of really interesting things, you output as a more intellectual person.
Mm-hmm.
So you just think about it in the context of like, what do you want your inputs to be?
So you would have taken in some more interesting inputs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think my inputs were kind of standard and like what everyone else, I was just looking at what everyone else was doing and I was like, those are the right inputs.
Especially in college.
Yeah. And I think there was an opportunity to say, what are the other versions?
I came into college as like, I'm a business student. I'm here to do business.
Yeah.
And like,
right.
And go party.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, that's right.
And that was standard
and
pretty traditional. And I found my way out of that.
Right.
As I think a lot of college students do.
You need a new inputs.
But you need new inputs,
You need new inputs.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where we'll close today. Thank you so much to everyone who has joined the Discord. Everyone who joined our first AMA, if you were there, you were part of something really cool with us.
That got wild.
We'll be doing more of those.
We're in the deep end right now. We ended up in the deepest end.
Yeah. If you haven't joined the Discord server yet, the link is in the description. Thank you again to Discord for being great partners, and we will see you in the deep end or the deepest end.